Hey, it's Chris Jones with the Jones Zone, and this episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Jones Zone at Keller Williams Realty. That's right, we sponsor our own podcast. So if you know of anybody looking to buy, sell, rent, or invest in residential real estate in the Charlotte, Rock Hill, Fort Mill area, have them connect with us on their favorite platform. Enjoy the show.
It's Chris and Brian Jones, your real estate advocates, community connectors, talking Charlotte and York County area real estate, and interviewing business owners, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
Count me down, Brian.
From five or three?
Four.
Four, three, two, one. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast. Brian, how are you?
Thank you for not interrupting me, by the way.
You're welcome.
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Let's get started with today. We're excited.
Very excited today.
Today we have JP Sears. If the name sounds familiar, it's probably because you've seen his videos and his content all over the internet. First of all, congrats on the engagement with Amber, dude. We managed to watch 8 minutes and 96 seconds of your 8 minute and 88 second video.
We actually watched more of the video than you produced of the video, if that makes sense.
Yeah, my 8 minute and 88 second video was, I don't know what it was, like 13 minutes long until my phone just went to sleep from overheating inside my sauna. But yeah, man, thank you for the congrats. And yeah. Chris and Brian, I'd like to say congrats to me for me being here engaged with you guys, not in a marital way, but in a conversing way. Happy to be here with y'all.
Well, appreciate that. JP is an emotional healing coach, international teacher, world traveler, and curious student of life. His intention is to empower people to empower themselves to live a more meaningful life. He's also the comedic genius behind the Ultra Spiritual Comedic Series. His YouTube channel, Awaken with JP, is one of the funniest ones around. It has over 515,000 subscribers and millions of views. He's also the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a half steps to spiritual superiority.
12 and a half steps.
13's getting a little carried away. Keep it right at 12 and a half. So JP, welcome to the Jones Zone, man.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here with y'all as we get ourselves, like, jonesed in the zone.
I love that.
That's exactly how
jonesed in the zone.
So that was a real quick, abbreviated version of who you are and what you do. But if you don't mind, just take a quick minute and share a little bit of your personal story, some of your professional background, and then how you got to be so spiritual.
Yeah, well, you know, part of my personal story that you guys neglected is I have beautiful, dolphin-like, majestic blue eyes. It's just really incredible.
They are majestic.
Yeah, thank you. I think they really shine through on an audio podcast.
The listeners will appreciate that.
Well, aside from my majestic blue eyes and, you know, unspeakable good looks, my background, you mentioned emotional healing, client coaching. I've been doing that for the past 16 years, and along the way, I've had a chance to do a lot of teaching, a lot of retreats and workshops around the world. And then, for me, that's very sincere, meaningful work going into the realm of the human heart and psyche with people to help them heal old pain, wounds, and step deeper into their personal power and authenticity. And then along the way, I started accidentally doing other things that have turned out, I'm blessed to say, very successful. So about 3 years ago, I started doing comedy videos on YouTube and Facebook, where I'm conveying my perspective through the language of humor. So there's satire, but also deeper messages that I embed in the humor. So I was very shocked to see that's caught on very well and opened up so many new doors in the career, business, professional realm that I never really imagined opening. I didn't even know they were doors that existed. Mm-hmm. So You know, currently, I actually earlier this year, first of the year, I let go of my one-on-one client practice, which it had been such a beautiful thing for me. Easy to let go of crappy things, but this was a beautiful thing that my heart was just calling. It's time to let go. There's newer things that I'd already been fertilizing for a long time, opportunities and projects, but burning the candle at both ends and in the middle can only last so long, so I had to let go of what had served me well in favor of what is serving me well right now. So yeah, man, and raised as a redhead child. I'm still a redhead child, so there's that in my life story too.
Yeah. And were you kind of a funny kid, or did that kind of develop as you grew older and how you, when you started exploring all your emotions and all that?
Yeah, well, I'm narcissistic enough to think I was a funny kid.
Yeah.
You know, I was always one of the class clowns, and you know, I'm not going to be the first person to say this, but school bored me to death. I have an ability to have an inability to engage deeply with anything unless it feels purposeful to me. The stuff in elementary, high school, all that stuff, it never felt purposeful. So I had to entertain myself one way or another, and a lot of times it was creating critical back talk to my teachers in my head. Once in a while that would escape, but you know, so that was a method of like creative humor. And then also how I could act out, say things, do actions in ways that would entertain my classmates, because that would entertain me. And also walking the fine line of tension of occasionally trying to entertain my teachers, getting them to laugh, but at the same time not going too far to the point where I get in trouble. So there's like a line of tension. Looking back, I could see like I was walking that to entertain myself. And then humor is the same thing, where you create tension. It has to be enough tension to really engage, but it can't be so much attention where it's just like slapping people in the face. So, but also, once I started to really dive deep and work on myself, my self-development, my healing, my spirituality, all saying the same thing, just different words, which I started when I was 20 and still continues, but that gave me, I think, a different dimension of humor, where now I could use humor in a way where it's for self-understanding and self-acceptance, self-connection, rather than humor used in a bullying way. Yeah, you know, it's very easy to make someone laugh when it's at someone else's expense. Or if you're good, you can make them laugh when it's at their expense. But that's bullying, and it's not something I want to do. But the idea of making people laugh because they're getting in touch with something about themselves that they hadn't been aware of, or you're saying something that everybody's thinking but nobody thinks that other people think it, but I say it on a video or on stage and that gets people to laugh. You know, the truth is what makes people laugh. So, you know, the truth from a place of self-realization, I think, is where my humor, at least where I intend for my humor to come from now. And that certainly wouldn't be possible if I haven't been, I guess, dysfunctional enough to need to do a lot of self-work and healing on my own heart.
So when you were doing all that, at what point did you start to bring on clients and become a coach? And then did you utilize humor right away in your practice? Or, I mean, I imagine these were people that were traumatized and looking for a coach, and were you able to implement comedy right away as part of your personality?
Yeah, so I started working with clients in my early 20s. Looking back, I could say, like, I would never work with
He's a kid. What does he know?
When you're old, it's like, you need to go work on yourself for 20 years before I'm going to work with you. But luckily, ignorance is bliss. I mean, honestly, I think the innocence of, like, a Forrest Gump-like innocence, where we're blind to our limitations, I think that can serve us really well at times. And it served me really well in my early 20s, where it's like, yeah, I'm going to jump in and swim before I figure out if there's water or not in the pool. And as far as using humor right away with clients, actually, even along the way, I never really did that with one-on-one clients. Maybe a little joke or two, a witty comment when it's, you know, in the beginning stages of an initial conversation, just to create a little, you know, release of tension, you know, ooh, we don't know each other. But I find humor is powerful. It can be a powerful connector, but also the other side of that power is also available. Humor can be a powerful deflector, a powerful disconnector. And I find when someone's already in the heart space of looking to work on themselves, most of the time from that point, humor is going to be taking them away from the intimacy of their heart in a small setting, like one-on-one.
Yeah.
But when it's in a group, a video, you know, an audience, a circle of people, then I find humor has a much more therapeutic benefit. There's something about, okay, laughter can be the cup of communion, of self-awareness we're all drinking from, that can take us deeper into ourselves. But, you know, when, as you mentioned, if someone's traumatized or wounded and they're being vulnerable, feeling feelings, maybe even crying, the last thing I want to do is make them laugh. That's going to constipate their process. So I think Spider-Man's uncle once said, with great power comes great responsibility.
He did say that.
With humor comes great responsibility. Knowing, at least having a decent idea when it's going to help someone and when it's not going to help someone. And when it's not going to help someone, you know, then it's a tool or a sword that needs to be sheathed.
Yeah.
And left in the toolbox, to use two analogies, tool and sword, in the same sentence.
That's pretty good. What gave you the confidence to start making these videos, and were they a means to an end? I mean, were you producing these videos as a way to gain clients, or was this something that you were kind of doing separately? I mean, how did you use those to help each other?
Yeah, so I thought the comedy videos would actually repel clients, not gain clients, and that's why I was so resistant for the first 13 years of my career to do comedy videos. And I had been doing YouTube videos for about a year and a half before I did anything comedy on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I started the original Sincere Life Advice YouTube videos to gain clients. And then when I started making when I made the first comedy video, I was like, oh, I think it's going to be bad for business. It'll discredit me as an emotional healing guy, spiritual teacher. But I think I had betrayed myself long enough, so I decided to, well, I gotta just voice my voice. And it turned out to be wonderful for business, which also taught me, like, yeah, don't believe everything you think, JP. You just because you think something is true doesn't have any correlation to true. This was really good for business. And the interesting, to me, the most interesting part of the question is the self-confidence. What gave me the self-confidence to start doing the videos? And my answer is a complete lack of confidence, but a willingness to act anyway. And I don't know about you guys, but it seems to be relatively universal in life where a lot of us wait around saying, yeah, I'll act once I'm confident.
Right.
I'll take the action. Yep. I'll start the new thing once I have the confidence to do it. But then there's like the wise people just laughing their asses off at us. They're like, yeah, it doesn't work that way. It's the exact opposite. You will gain confidence once you start acting, which necessitates you leave your comfort zone and you feel unconfident while you're taking action.
Yeah.
And you'll probably feel that way for a long time. But just like a child who doesn't know how to ride a bike, they can't go in the opposite order. They can't say, well, I'll start riding the bike once I feel confident. It's like, no, you're going to be weeble wobbly. Yeah. You're going to suck at it. You're going to fall. In other words, you have to be unconfident, but be willing to act anyway, mm-hmm. to then develop the stability in your stance of doing the craft to actually have confidence. So I would say, you know, I didn't feel a remote level of confidence until I was probably at least 20 comedy videos in, maybe even more than that. And I think present day, while I have a certainly a degree of confidence. I don't like to rest in that comfort zone,
yeah.
or else I'm not growing, and I'm sure as hell I'm not keeping my interest. So I have to challenge myself, whether it's to do videos on new subject matter or express myself in a way that's not video. I've got an upcoming comedy tour. The book I wrote was another step out of my comfort zone. I was so unconfident with that. So
it was hilarious, by the way. Yeah. It was a good book.
Being willing to expand into new territory where I am not confident, it is scary but necessary in order for me to feel fulfilled, happy, and entertained with what I do.
Totally.
I mean, what you're saying really resonates with us too, because we've done, you know, this is podcast 70 something, and we've done 20 plus videos as well, and a lot of them are comedic. And in the real estate space,
try to be comedic. Yeah.
In the real estate,
yeah, you guys think so?
Yeah, when I do the playback, I'm going to steal your line about whatever you said earlier about what you think is funny, because that was a good line.
Yeah.
But and you know, I mean, real estate can be a serious business too. I mean, these are huge financial investments, and people want to feel like they're with a professional and not someone that's silly. So we kind of dance that fine line as well, and hope that it works. And a quick question I had about, you said it helped business. So did people sign up for your coaching based on having seen a video? And then how are they able to differentiate the two different JPs, the comedic one and the coach?
Yeah, so I think how the comedy videos then translated into more client business is the comedy videos would get a lot of horizontal attention, you know, millions of views, which then would bring not everybody's attention, but some people's attention to my sincere videos on YouTube. You know, they land on my channel because they're going to watch a video called How to Be Ultra Spiritual or How to Be Gluten Intolerant. Then they find out, oh, wow, he's got a video how to deal with a narcissist. Let me check on that. And they watch it and like, oh, he's very sincere in that. Like, and maybe I even enjoy his perspective and felt benefit from it. And then they check out my website and like, oh, this weirdo actually does emotional coaching. So I think that's how it worked. And I think especially in the beginning, I got a lot of messages where people were confused, where they'd say like, yeah, are you serious or are you just doing comedy? And I'd say, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you actually have that video on your website where you talk about the balance and using, you know, your left hand and right hand. So, I mean, I think you do an amazing job at doing what you're doing, man. It's it must have been really hard for you to kind of go in a new direction, like you said, with your clients and seizing those new opportunities that you're having. Do you have?
It was hard. Because there's no assurance that this is a good direction. It's just like a, you know, the blind man stumbling along.
Who are some of your professional role models?
Yes, I mean, obviously aside from you guys,
beside us, obviously
we're gonna quote you on that.
We're gonna make that a t-shirt.
Yeah, there you go.
It says besides us.
Yeah. we're gonna find the funniest picture we can find of you, whether it's like something like that. We'll have to get that. I'll send Sharon a proof.
I'm sure there's Karen. Plenty of super unflattering pictures available to choose from. And what was the question?
What was the professional role models? Yeah.
Professional.
Who are your professional role models?
John McMullen, his organization is called JourneysOfWisdom.com. It's his website. Since I was in my early 20s, he was is a big-time role model, mentor. I've taken hundreds and hundreds of hours of classroom classes with him, just to be redundant with the word classes, in the realm of emotional healing and self-growth, both in terms of working on myself, but also in terms of working with other people, clients as well. So I have no words to say how grateful I am for John McMullen. He's become not just a professional role model and mentor, but a super close friend and just feels like a brother. And he's the most playful person I've ever met, and he's 76 years old.
Oh.
So
oh, wow.
Whatever's in the water that he's drinking is something I want some of.
Awesome. What about speaking comedically? So you got this tour coming up. What's the show kind of look like? And then who are some of your comedic influences? Are there shows that you watch or comedians that that you're a big fan of?
Yeah, well, what the show is going to look like is a little bit unknown at this point. I've, you know, given that it's about 2 months away before I need to have half a clue what the hell I'm doing. it's not completely formed yet, but there will be certainly some resemblance of stand-up comedy. And whenever I do live performances, talks, one of my favorite elements is engaging with the audience and just improvising and letting sort of the art of wit fly. So I definitely want to have some elements of that. You know, planning to have unplanned elements is important. And it's also important for me to have room to talk from my heart on stage. And I realize, given the context, it'll need to be in an amusing way, or at least sandwiched in amusement. So that's the big picture of what the show will be. And when I, you know, the past year and a half, I've been doing a lot of speaking and comedy for different conferences and with my book tour, and there's a lot of that I was learning from. You know, what feels good to me, what seems to work well. So I'll be taking a pretty conscious inventory before too long to learn from the past year and a half and create this thing that we're calling the comedy show. And then as far as comedic influences, I'm going to sound a little narcissistic and self-righteous. To me, I also don't like to be comedically influenced. I like to be comedically inspired, where when I try to be comedically influenced, it feels deflating. Like, I'll watch amazing comedians like Bill Burr, he's amazing, Bill Hicks, Joe Rogan, Louis C.K., and man, I just feel worse about myself when I try to, like, be influenced. Like, and here's these guys. They've been doing the art of stand-up comedy for at least 20 years, each of them, maybe longer. And it's deflating. And another thing is, like, their way isn't my way. But I like to be inspired watching how each of them is true to themselves. They're true to their message. They unapologetically express their message through the language of comedy their own way, with their own accent, their own delivery. And I love being inspired by watching them be unapologetic, because I think what's most helpful for me is unapologetically embracing my way. I think what's hurt me, and I've certainly made this mistake plenty of times because I need to learn it, and apparently I'm a slow learner, but the mistake of trying to do things someone else's way, which it's such a tantalizing seduction, in my opinion, seeing something work so well for someone. Like, what it's taken me a while to realize, it works so well for them because that's their way.
Yeah.
It's not the strategy or the skill they're implementing that works so well, but the fact that that is unique to their fingerprints. So the ambiguous journey for each of us of finding our own way, that I think is the most rewarding path, whether it's comedy or business or any other pursuit.
Yeah. I'm sure they'd say similar things about you. I mean, Bill Burr and Louis C.K., I mean, and you. I mean, you don't get better in the pantheon of redheaded comedians.
No.
They really...
This is the Mount Rushmore.
That is the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Can we find a fourth?
We can find a fourth.
Can we find a fourth?
We'll make the Mount Rushmore.
You know what's interesting is I had never even thought of, like, them being redheads. I'm a redhead. So out of, like, the four comedians I mentioned...
I was trying to think if Bill Hicks was redheaded. He's brown-haired, right?
He's brown.
brown hair. But out of the four comedians I mentioned, two of them have red hair. Three out of five, if I count myself, have red hair, which defies the odds. I think it's only 1% of the population has red hair, but in this case, 60% of the population of these comedic pool has red hair, which basically tells you redheads have a higher percentage of being dysfunctional people yes. and then compensating for it through comedy.
Can we put Carrot Top on the Mount Rushmore? Would you be comfortable with that if we put Carrot Top on the Mount Rushmore?
That's a good question. I don't feel comfortable.
Okay. I was in Vegas. I didn't see him, but I saw a bunch of signs. What do you find more satisfying, or maybe it's a different type of satisfaction, your connection with your emotional health clients or the connection that you're having with your fans and the people that come to your comedy and your speeches?
Yeah, man, I need both, to be honest with you. And it's been 9 months since my emotional healing client coaching practice since I've let go of it. But that one-on-one connection, you know, it's a human connection. I don't care if I call them client, friend, or, you know, I was just at a mastermind event in Austin, or if it's sitting at the table with someone having a meaningful conversation and connection, I need that connection. And it's a different connection than the connections with fans. So, they are both deeply satisfying in different ways. It's like they're different flavors in the palette of the professional life. And I think both flavors are necessary. And they complement each other super well, even though they're different.
So you recently went to Boise for the ClickFunnels viral launch party, and you saw Gary Vaynerchuk speak. So how was that trip? What'd you take away from that?
Man, that trip, that's a good question. I think I mentioned it before we were on air. Watching Gary Vaynerchuk on video is an adrenaline rush. Watching him in person, that's like snorting adrenaline. So, but honestly, and my girlfriend, fiance,
yes,
she went with me and also had some other amazing friends there. But Amber, my fiance, and I were talking about like what was like the biggest takeaway from the whole weekend. And it was amazing event, a lot of takeaways. But I would say a line of Gary Vaynerchuk's during the question-answer interaction. Forget what the hell the question was. Doesn't even matter. But what he said really struck me. What got you to where you are isn't going to get you to go where you're going. And I love that. And it's a reaffirming truth that I've already believed, but it's one of those things I need a reminder of. I've always believed that what serves us well will eventually disserve us if we stay attached to it. And, you know, it's like you look at like someone in the gym lifting 100 pounds helps them grow to, you know, whatever size the muscles are. But guess what? Their muscles get stronger. So if they stay attached to that 100 pounds that has served them well, that's going to limit their growth. They need to let that go and pick up 130 pounds, then let that go. So, you know, in my business, my professional life, I look at what has worked well for me, and I can't rest my head too comfortably on that pillow, or else it'll put me to sleep and stunt my growth. But at the same time, there's this ambiguous world where I don't want to let something go before it's, you know, taking me to the next stage. You know, it's a mystery to navigate, but I think being aware that there is this beautiful mystery in business and I think other realms of life where something that has gotten us to a great place, it's helped us really well, won't get us to the next step. Something else will be necessary, whether it's something in addition or we got to let go of this thing, embrace something new. Earlier this year, I mentioned my client practice. I had to let that go. That got me to a wonderful place. It really did. But it was time to release that. Yeah. And that's scary, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. What advice do you have to entrepreneurs and people that are out on their own and, excuse me, in terms of just marketing and having a day-to-day routine, or, you know, just any advice in general to business owners and entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think my first piece of advice is to know that money is what will make you happy. More is always better, and especially money at the expense of disconnecting from meaningful people in your life. Obviously.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we've said that. We've told friends
that. We've told that. Look, make your money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And, yeah, man, and in addition to that, I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins.
Hey, me too. He's coming to Charlotte next month.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
What's he doing in Charlotte?
Him and Marcus Lemonis are coming, doing a little speech seminar.
What's it called? The something experience. I can't remember.
What's it called? Ultimate Fulfillment.
Something like that.
Experience or something. Anyway, yeah.
Sounds awesome. I mean, he in person is just like, wow, that's like being on a rocket ship, his energy.
Yeah,
and you mentioned fulfillment. So there's a quote of Tony Robbins that I absolutely love. Achievement without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. So to me, it's so important. Like achieving, like that's important. Like I'd love to say I'm so zen, like I don't care about achieving. No, I really do. But I have to realize that fulfillment is something different. Fulfillment doesn't come from achievement. Fulfillment is a different craft in life. So one of the things to me that helps feed fulfillment and achievement for all entrepreneurs is a willingness to step the hell out of your comfort zone. And I think there's one of my favorite authors, Brené Brown. She has said, he or she who's willing to be the most uncomfortable not only rises the highest, but is also the bravest. Mm-hmm. I might have said that backwards, but he or she who's willing to be the most uncomfortable rises the highest. And to me, there's daily rituals I do to make myself uncomfortable. I have a free chest freezer full of water on my back deck that I get into, so it's 30-some degree water each day. And that's a physical and psychological practice of embracing discomfort. My body will respond as though that's going to kill me. You know, there's a stress response that goes off. But what I want to train my body and mind to do is realize that which I think is going to kill me won't. Of course, I'll use my prefrontal cortex. If there's a grizzly bear, I'm not going to go wrestle it. I'll actually know that will kill me, but I know getting into cold water won't. Saying yes to opportunities that I don't know how to do, they scare me, yet they enliven my heart. That's like metaphorically getting into the freezer full of water. When I had book publishers approach me about writing a book, that was metaphorically another freezer full of cold water that I was getting into. I don't know how to write a book until I write a book.
Yeah.
But it felt purposeful. It lit me up inside. And to me, with regular training of discomfort for people in business, as well as people that just want like a fulfilled life of expanding themselves, I think we do ourselves a great service when we psychologically and physically routinely put ourselves into discomfort and experience the feelings of it.
Yeah.
It trains us at a deep somatic level. Wow, being uncomfortable doesn't actually hurt me. I might be uncomfortable, but it doesn't injure us. And we actually will tend to learn, I feel more alive when I'm willing to embrace discomfort. Like you get in the freezer full of cold water, wow, you feel alive. You get into an opportunity that you don't know how to do, man, you'll start to feel more alive.
Yeah. In I'm Not Your Guru, doesn't Tony jump into like a little thing of water like that too?
Yeah, it's not ice, I don't think, but it's very cold water. He dives in there and does his thing.
I don't want to just make claims that I'm more advanced than Tony, but...
Wouldn't put you on the spot, yeah.
My understanding is his plunge pool he has is 56 degree water.
Yeah.
Mine is, oftentimes I'm actually breaking frozen ice off the top, so my, let's just call mine somewhere between 35, 32 and well, it wouldn't be 32, 33 and 40 degrees. So I think that really suggests that I'm more successful than Tony Robbins.
And more advanced, yeah.
I mean, it's just the difference between...
Yeah. Like, he should probably add some ice cubes.
It's
like,
the difference between spiritual and ultra-spiritual.
That's
really.
It. That's really... You hit the head, nail on the head there.
Now, you went to Date with Destiny or something. Didn't you go to one of those?
Yeah, I went to UPW, Unleash the Power Within. I was very honored to have Tony reach out and invite me there to be his guest, and just really, really honored and blessed. I was there front row and able to just take things in. Just, I mean, it's like being the first one in a crowd of people to get hit by the truck that's driving into the crowd of people. It was just absolutely amazing event. I had, I think, pretty high expectations going in, and even my high expectations were completely shattered. The depth of that man's work, his heart and soul, is it's far beyond what's portrayed in the media. I think a lot of times people look at it like, he's great with money, great for motivation, and like, he's a genius in those areas. Great with behavioral change, and his ability to connect vulnerably with people and help them navigate the unseen territory of their psyche, their wounds. That was the most impressive part for me.
How do you juxtapose him and Gary Vee? Or how did they kind of differ and make you feel the same in a way?
Man, you know, the high energy and the amount of work they do, I think, is very similar. My opinion, and this is all due respect to Gary Vaynerchuk, my opinion is Tony Robbins' work is more well-rounded. You know, I know when I first started watching Gary Vee, Hustle 24/7, okay. Well, for JP, the more he does that, the worse he feels,
right,
and the crappier my work gets. I don't know, I mean, his ability to not need sleep, his ability to not need time with his family, to not need playtime, whatever, he's a different person than me. But I think I'm aligned much more with Tony Robbins's, I would say, more holistic work, where connection with relationships, with people, with play is at least as important, if not more important, than what is very important, which is one's work. So I think his whole thing, achievement and fulfillment being two different things, Tony Robbins very much is about fulfillment with achievement. And I think Gary Vaynerchuk seems to be a genius with achievement. I don't think fulfillment is really part of Gary's offering. And like, why should it be? Like, his paintings should be his color. They're not going to be Tony Robbins's color.
Yeah. Well, let's bring it back to you, man. We're going to give you, we're probably going to wrap up here, and let's give you another minute or so. Let's talk about what you got coming up. How can people find you? Let's talk about the tour dates and times and cities again, and just let's take it home.
Yeah, you know, the best way for people to find me on social media, Facebook.
Scrolling through Facebook, they'll find you.
Yeah. All my social media handles are Awaken with JP. So there's great places to find me. And, man, you know, some exciting things that I've got coming up. I've got a membership program that I'm launching here within the next 2 weeks. It'll be bringing sincerity and comedy full circle together to ultimately help people live a more meaningful, fulfilled life while having fun doing it. So playfulness and purposefulness will be a big part of this membership community. So I'm very much looking forward to the launching of this baby. It has me very much lit up inside. And then amongst other things, I've got the first phase of a comedy tour coming up. I'll be hitting Boston, Brooklyn, and Washington, D.C. end of November. So all that stuff is on my website, awakenwithjp.com. And, of course, if someone finds me incredibly offensive or too handsome, than all those Awaken with JP handles on social media. My website, awakenwithjp.com, is where you'll want to avoid me.
Okay. Well, JP Sears, congratulations on all your success, and thank you for taking some time out to talk to us. And we look forward to following you and all your works in the future, man.
For sure, Chris and Brian, you guys are gentlemen and scholars and
pillars of the community.
Pillars of community is what the script says next.
Yes.
So I appreciate you guys taking your time and inviting me to hold up some space here on the podcast. Appreciate you guys.
Hey, all right, our man. Pleasure. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Jones Zone Podcast with Chris and Brian Jones. We'll catch you on the next episode.